He's 28, educated, and still expects mom and dad to take care of him.
They're married with children of their own, but these sisters still have an outgrown sibling rivalry. Will they ever grow up?
Today on Real Family Talk, we'll talk about what you can do when your adult children still need to grow up. Join us. A couple wrote to us saying, what should we do about our son? He is 28, a college graduate who recently completed a master's degree, but is still depending on us to pay his rent and other expenses. When we tell him it's time for him to take care of himself, he tells us the job market is difficult and he has not been able to find work. What should we do or say? Wow.
Wow, indeed.
This is definitely a case of failure to launch.
Failure to launch.
And we're not talking about launching a spaceship, right?
We're talking about launching children.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Because every parent prepares their child to enter life.
Well, you're saying every parent prepares. I'm not sure every parent prepares. Every parent will like to believe they have prepared their children to enter life. But that's not always the case. Sometimes we simply haven't kept our hand on the plow. We haven't been diligent about setting up our children. By that I mean giving them opportunities to grow up, to take responsibility. When we spend all this time in their early life doing for them, instead of allowing them to learn to do for themselves, on the other side, on the upper regions of life, in their 20s, many young adults are still not launching.
Yes, and I'm sure there's some value to that. There's a lot of value to what you're saying, but ultimately it's the decision of the child, right? Because this child, the parents are saying, he's 28, he went to school, he did all the things he was supposed to do, but now he wants to be at home.
Well, I'm not trying to blame anyone here, but what I do know is that as we socialize our children, they tend to follow those cues. And for example, if we never gave them an opportunity to learn how to set a table, they're not going to be 35 and married and all of a sudden they know how to set a table. Or if we never initiate them in the fine art of cooking a meal, it's not just going to happen because they are 30 or 35. So I think there is an intentionality that needs to take place. Not blaming anyone, simply talking about the realities that launching children is something we need to think about from before they are born.
I would agree with that. I think also there's what this parent needs to do is to help the child make the leap from dependence to interdependence.
Or independence.
To be, well, sometimes I think we have to begin with interdependence.
Small steps.
Before we get to independence. Yeah. And to be sure, parenting never ends. And there's always going to be some things that you help your children do, but this child needs to begin to understand that he has some responsibility.
Well, I want to challenge that just a little bit here. You say parenting never ends. The fact that I'm always going to be my children's father never ends. But I believe there's a time when I don't need to parent them anymore. I'm more as a peer. I'm more as a guide on the side if they need to touch bases with me, if they want to, you know, find out or just pick my brain about something. But parenting, I think we need to make a distinction between parenting and always being your child's parent.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why I'm saying parenting never ends. But what needs to end is that dependence.
Indeed.
And so as parents, we need to learn how to set. We keep talking about this thing called boundaries, and they're age-appropriate boundaries. And so we begin to help the child become self-sufficient. So perhaps what this parent needs to do is to help the child set some healthy benchmarks.
And we're saying child. And I think at this point we need to change
the young
that.
Adult. The young adult.
28. College graduate, master's degree.
Right.
This is a young adult.
Right.
This is basically an adult.
And he should probably begin paying rent. Maybe he needs a little opportunity to get a job. But what we would suggest is that perhaps what he needs to do is we set some benchmarks. In the next 6 months,
yes,
you need to get a job. And at this point, it doesn't matter what job you get. Yes, you should be actively looking for a job in your field, but if that doesn't materialize, maybe there needs to be some other job that the person gets, that the young adult will get, in order to begin paying some rent to his parents.
Paying some bills. Taking care of himself.
And beginning to take care of himself so that we're better preparing him for the real world.
And the truth is, this is just a service to your children. When we tend to forget to do these things, we're doing a disservice to our children because we're not helping them. We're harming them. Because if you're 28 and a college graduate and a master's degree, you should be taking care of yourself. I know that there are many who are not. In fact, should I say, just at lunchtime, we ran into a parent that we know and we've known for a long time since their child was little. And you ask, how is your child doing? And he said, what the fathers say, he said, he's still eating my food. In other words, he's still living at home. And this young man happens to have a job and maybe making even more money than his father, but still living at home and eating his parents' food. I think when you get to the place where you're an adult, instead of sucking the resources from your parents, it's time to begin to give back.
Yeah. Well, to be sure, every parent needs to be sure what they can give and what they can't give, and what they want to give and what they don't want to give. So we don't want to prescribe for families what they should do, but the sooner they can help their child become more independent, the better off everyone will be. So does sibling rivalry end when children become adults or after they leave their parents' house? We'll talk about that after this short break. Our next question says, our children were always competitive and we thought they'd grow out of it. However, now they're married with families of their own. The sibling rivalry, petty arguments, and never-ending competition hasn't ended and in some ways has gotten worse. Will they ever grow up?
That's an amazing question. And in some families, the question looms large. You know, and I've seen it in some families where
the competition just increases. And
it never ends. It never stops.
What the parent is saying about it getting worse, because as one child attains more degrees or income or whatever
status,
it is status they have,
bigger homes,
that competition.
Everybody wants to compete. You know, I've seen it where siblings, one of the siblings gets a nice home, and the other one that had a decent home thinks now it's time to up the other sibling.
I've even seen it with people having children.
Yes.
You know, one sister has a child, then the other sister has a child, and the other sister has another child, and then they each have like 3 or 4 children because they want to make sure that the grandparents don't have more children from one than the other. So that's,
I don't know what to do with that.
That's serious sibling rivalry, and it's a tough thing, and it's something that really should be addressed very early on. and parents need to be sensitive to it. Unfortunately, what happens sometimes is parents create the sibling rivalry.
They create the competition when their children are small, and instead of kind of tempering that reality, they continue to exploit it.
Right. And sometimes we favor one child over the other. We might make comments like, oh, well, look at your brother. Look at your sister. Look how neat your sister is.
Or look at your sister, how she gets great grades in math. And she is a mathematician. She's a wizard, and she gets straight A's. Or the children listen to their parents talking at dinner time with their friends. Or on the telephone. Oh, you should see my Matthew, and they're on the telephone and they say, oh, he is the youngest, but he's the most brilliant and he gets the best grades of all.
Yeah.
So it creates a sibling
kind of jealousy,
rivalry,
kind of
an environment of competition. And instead of it being an environment where we're supporting each other, where we are celebrating the successes of the other without feeling less than. We all have our place and we all have our gifts, and they don't all have to be the same gift.
And that's where we say that each child has their unique needs and we need to pay attention to what each child brings to the table. So if we have a child that is brilliant in math, there's nothing wrong with affirming that child, with saying, look, Matthew is just so good with numbers, but we need to find what are the gifts of the other child.
And celebrate those gifts as well.
And celebrate those gifts. So Anna may be good with reading.
Yes.
And we need to celebrate the fact that Anna is good with reading and make sure that Anna hears us talking about her being good at reading and what she's good at. But I would also say that we need to encourage our children in the areas where they aren't that strong, and not make such an emphasis about where they're not strong.
You mean not only make an emphasis on where they're strong.
What's strong, but also areas that need improvement and help them with that, so that they don't feel they grow up for the rest of their lives saying, well, you know what, everybody always said I'm not good at math.
Yes, and so I'm not good at math.
Right, right. So they become self-fulfilling
prophecies.
Yeah. So talking to this parent who asked the question about her adults, obviously she can't go back.
You can't go back.
And reparent these children.
So what do you do with adult children who have children of their own, families of their own, and they're still at each other's throats? Sibling rivalry. Well, what is sibling rivalry? We already explained
it. Yeah, we already explained
it. When there is this intense competition between siblings, for no good reason other than they're comparing themselves. And a good thing to do with young children is not have them comparing themselves to somebody else. Be happy for your gifts that God has given. God has endowed everyone. The Bible says a measure of faith. Everyone has a measure of faith. What is that measure? Some people may have a bigger measure and some may have a smaller measure. What I love about what Scripture has to say about this is it says, since we're speaking about faith, if your faith were as small as a grain of mustard seed, you can say to the tree or to the mountain, go over there and it'll go over there. So what it's saying is, whatever your measure is, you can use that to full potential to make a difference in your context in the world. But now we're talking about grown children.
Right.
What do we do?
Well, what definitely needs to happen, this mom or dad or both parents really need to bring the siblings together and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. While it's not her job to mediate or any of that, probably they're putting her in the middle. They're what we say that she's triangulating the parent. And so she can really speak with them, or she can speak with them individually and really begin now to find a way to affirm both of them. Because at the end of the day, sibling rivalry has to do with competing for the love of the parents.
Yeah.
They want to be seen in the eyes of the parent as being as good as the other one.
And or better.
Yeah. Or for whatever reason, they picked up somewhere that there was some
favoritism. To one of the children.
And it's not to blame the parents, because sometimes as parents,
we have favorites.
Well, not so.
I'm saying, parents don't like to.
Favorites.
Well, that's nice that you say that. Parents don't like to admit the fact that they have favorites, but they do have favorites. And you know who their favorites are? Whoever listens to them more.
Well, and but not only, okay, you and I, sometimes I think we have a little bit of a difference of opinion
on that.
And that's
okay.
And that's okay. But I also feel that we also gravitate towards the child that is closest to us in personality type.
Indeed.
Or
that's why that child is
more. Or maybe if you're a type A personality, you're going to gravitate towards the one who's not type A. If there's one that's type A, that one's going to rub you the wrong way. So there are some personality issues that get involved in the whole situation. But we as parents need to be a little bit more alert to that.
What's the hope we give to this parent?
The hope that we give to this parent is really to keep praying about it.
Pray.
I do believe that.
With God, all things are possible.
All things are possible. And begin a process of helping these two siblings.
Two or three, right?
Two siblings to begin to get along. Bring them together and don't tolerate it. It's a non-negotiable. When you come to my home, we're not going to tolerate the fighting, the arguing, the bitterness, the petty rivalry. Find ways to bring them together and to help them to be more cohesive in their relationship. Up next, is there really only one Mr. Right? We'll talk about that after these messages.
So how old were you when you got married? Here's what viewers had to say in our Facebook poll. Age 21 through 30, 57.1%. Between the ages of 31 and 40, 28.6%. Between the ages of 20 or younger, 9.5%. Between the ages of 41 to 50, 4.8%. And I guess no one in our poll got married after age 51. I guess they gave up. And over 60, no one as well. I guess all the people on Facebook are a little younger.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. So it looks like ages 21 to 30, that's the highest percentage. Yeah. That seems to be the prime time when people get married, but I'm really intrigued by the fact that 31 to 40, that percentage is going up, 28.6%.
And it's going up even as we speak. But, you know, when we talk about when you and I got married, we are in the first group.
We're in the first group. We got married, we were pretty young.
Yeah, we were pretty young.
Yeah, younger than, we fit right into that age group.
So how old were you when you got married?
I was 22.
You were 22.
When I got married, yeah.
How old was I when I got
married? And you were 25.
I was 25 when I got married.
Yeah, so in today's language, I mean, we would be kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the kids we know or some of the people we know of who are 22 and 25, you know, perish the thought that they'd be getting married anytime soon, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I think it was very different back then. And now we know from social scientific research that it's better to get married
after age 25
because of reasons of cognitive development and psychosocial development.
Financial development.
Yeah. That's not to say that if you get married earlier that you don't have those things, but we know that we're a little more mature. After age 25, we our prefrontal cortex of our brain, our center of judgment, is a little more developed. And so that's probably a better age. The interesting thing that we also know, though, is that after age 30,
It begins to go the other way.
It begins to go the other way because at that point now, people are more settled in their ways. They're more settled in their careers. They're more committed to their lifestyles.
Used to being alone, less prone to flexibility. So between 25 and 30 is probably
it's still probably the best time, the optimum time to get married.
It doesn't mean you can't get married after 30 and do well. It doesn't mean you can't get married before 25 and do well. It just is that between 25 and 30, people tend to do better than before or after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are more statistics to shape and discuss our conversation here. The average age of first-time marriages, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, in 1900, men were 25.9, and women were 21.9 years of age at their first marriage.
Oh, that's almost like us, you know.
Yeah, that's similar to us. And in 2016, men were 29.5 years of age, and women were 27.4 years of age at their first marriage. So you see that that number
is rising. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that people are going to school more, the fact that people want to have more education when they get married, and people want to be better prepared for marriage.
And they're waiting until after they get their education, which I personally believe is better, that you get some of those things out of the way before you get married.
There are some negatives, though, and the negatives are that developmentally, people are ready to launch, ready to engage in real life, and the hormones are pumping. And so what do you do between those ages of 21 and 30 if you're waiting all that time to get married? How do you stay to the biblical paradigm of fornication and not getting involved in fornication? And since sex has been given to God, by God, to married people. And then single people started acting like married people. So that's one thing that we need to be careful of and pay attention that it's going to militate against many individuals the later they wait to get married.
Yeah, so there are other places where people are watching Real Family Talk that we want to look at what their age at first marriage is. In South Africa, it's age 32. And 29 for men and women, respectively.
Yeah, so 32 for men.
32 for men.
29 for women.
32 for women, 29 for men, right?
32 for men, 39 for women.
Okay. 29 for women.
Yes.
Respectively.
And men tend to get married later than women in every demographic.
Right.
Yes.
Right. In the Netherlands, it's 33 and 30, respectively. And in New Zealand, it's 30 and 28. So we see those going towards the 30s. Yeah. In Canada, it's 31 and 29. And in Jamaica, it's 33.2 for both men and women.
Wow. So,
so Jamaica at first marriage.
So Jamaica takes the cake. So in JA, that's what they call Jamaica, it's 32.2 for both men and women. Wow.
That's pretty high. I still feel that that's probably not a bad age to get married when we think about level of maturity. The problem is that oftentimes it goes back to the question we answered earlier, which is during that time, many of these young adults are staying at home.
Yes.
And so in essence, the parents become a de facto spouse. You know, there's a certain dependence on your parents
for emotional support, for financial support
that you would really be getting from
a spouse
or a mate. Yeah. So that's an issue. So what's an age? What's the appropriate age to get married?
Well, we already talked about that. And we said that
between
the ages of 25 and 30 is probably the optimum. And the reason being is because the prefrontal cortex of the brain is fully developed by that time. More often than not, people have launched. Of course, we just heard earlier on in this segment that a 28-year-old who had a college degree and a master's degree had not launched. But more often than not, people become financially independent. Not that they're financially like they're independently wealthy,
right,
but they become independent.
They pay their own bills.
Yes.
Here's a question from a mother who has a worry we hear often. My daughter is in her late 30s, and though she says she really wants to be married, and I've met some really nice suitors, she says she still hasn't found the one. Is she being too picky, and is there really only one Mr. Right? Now, I know you have a big opinion on this one Mr. Right situation.
Well, I don't believe that there's one person that God has for you. I believe that...
That scares people.
I believe there could be a number of individuals that, you know, either one of them could be a suitable one. I think it's a problem, though, if you're in your late 30s and you have access to formidable men, as the mother is saying. But of course, the mother is judging with her judgment and the daughter is judging with her judgment. But to be 39 and to have access to suitors and think that you're still waiting for number one or for that right one, what makes someone the right one? And should we turn that question on its head and ask, are you the right one? And is that what you're afraid of? Because this militates against many individuals getting married. Emotional concerns. I remember when I was in graduate school, I read a book, Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? Why Am I Afraid to Love? And people are invariably afraid to love, afraid to have intimate relationships. And by that I mean get to the point of marriage, get to a relationship that is that close is because they have concerns about themselves. They haven't accepted themselves. They are afraid that if people get to know them any better, they're not going to be liked.
Yeah. And sometimes people haven't been loved enough. And so they don't feel lovable. But they want to be married, but there's that fear that they really are not lovable. So even when people express an interest in them, they feel unlovable. So people need to learn to love themselves first.
Yes.
You can't love someone else if you don't love yourself.
So you need to feel comfortable in your skin, and that may take some help. If you're now an adult in your late 30s and you haven't gotten to that place, perhaps a good Christian counselor might be able to help you arrive at a place where you're comfortable with yourself and you are ready to be in partnership with someone else.
Absolutely. That's all for today's Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll talk more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. Meanwhile, to watch more of Real Family Talk, please visit our website at hopetv.org/Real Family Talk.